Even in today's world, UFO are not taken seriously by academia. And even with a wealth of multi-sensor data, the world of physics does not conduct hard analysis on UFO. Due to the powerful stigma, the idea that craft can perform aerial feats that violate our known laws of physics and break by magnitudes our current capabilities of material science are not just forgotten about, but actively scoffed at. Well, there is one accomplished academic who publicly takes the physics of UFO seriously, PhD physicist Kevin Knuth. Hey guys, it's UAP Gerb, and for all my engineering and physics brethren, we are going to be very happy, for today we are going to tackle the Soul Foundation speech by Kevin Knuth on UAP physics, and break down his published paper, Estimating Flight Characteristics of Anomalous Unidentified Aerial Vehicles. This is a video I've been looking forward to making for a long time, as regardless of how elusive and exotic UAP are, quantifiable data from multiple sensors on these craft's flight characteristics have and can be measured. Quickly, who is Kevin Knuth? Professor Knuth is a physics professor at the University of Albany and earned his PhD in physics from the University of Minnesota. He also conducts research into information physics, foundation of quantum mechanics, and Bayesian analysis applications. Recently, Knuth has taken a key interest in UFOs, serving as vice president of UAPX, a nonprofit UFO field research group, and is a research affiliate to Avi Loeb's Galileo Project, which searches for scientific evidence of NHI artifacts. In late 2023, the professor also held a mind-boggling talk at the Soul Foundation, which we will cover today. On the 25th of September 2019, Knuth, along with Robert M. Powell and Peter A. Reilly, published a paper in Entropy titled Estimating Flight Characteristics of Anomalous Unidentified Aerial Vehicles. This paper, which has deeply inspired me since its publication, aims to analyze the performance characteristics of some of the most well-documented UFO cases in history, including the 1951 Bethane encounter, the 1986 Japan Airlines Flight 1628, which I talked about in Layer 2 of my iceberg, and a massive dive into the infamous 2004 Nimitz encounter, with emphasis on Commander David Fravor's testimony and the FLIR footage. In this paper, the physicists used data on UFOs to estimate flight speed, experienced G-force, and more of the encounters. To any of the community that may be interested in physics, this paper reads like a dream, so check it out for yourselves. We will not dive into the data and results now, as the professor touches on these cases in the Soul Foundation talk. In November of 2023, alongside powerful figures such as Carl Nell, David Grush, Gary Nolan, and more, Knuth gave a talk to the Soul Foundation focused on the physics of UAP, and let's jump right in. Knuth begins his presentation by wisely stating his skepticism towards UFO and physicists who deny the plausibility of physics-defined craft, specifically stating, quote, "I am skeptical of people who have assumed they have witnessed an alien spacecraft," end quote. Knuth humbly states that it is surprising academia stalwartly states we know our physics, when modern-day research fails to unify even general relativity and quantum mechanics.
Engineering is the act of using physics to find workarounds to problems, and unfamiliar engineering can look a whole lot like anomalous physics. So I am not ready to immediately jump to the conclusion that there's anomalous physics going on when we see some anomalies.
Similar to Nell, Kevin highlights the issue with the term UAP, knocking the ambiguity out of the term.
Some of these things are observed very well and described very well.
While presenting UAP as a class of phenomena, Knuth presents a slide of 7 UFO images, and yes, my profile image can be seen here, taken in 2007 in Green Bay, Wisconsin. The inclusion of these images is very deliberate, so let's go through the context of each image. And let's knock out the Mosul orb from 2016 in Iraq, provided by Jeremy Corbell, and Japan 1943 Foo Fighters, as these have been discussed to death. Costa Rica 1971 occurred on the Lago de Cota, Costa Rica. The photo was taken by a government mapping plane during an aerial mapping mission. A high-quality photo of this disc was taken from 10,000 feet. Interestingly, the 4 crew did not notice this craft, but locals near the lake reported strange sightings of a disc-shaped craft operating around and below the lake's surface. The Weyuwega, Wisconsin 2003 image is actually quite disturbing. This image features a disc hovering over trees. According to the photographer's account, she and her son were sledding near dusk when the child pointed to lights in the sky. The photographer quickly snapped three images of the disc as it passed directly overhead. And according to the woman, the lights cycled between different colors. The UFO evidence investigator attempted to contact the photographer for more information to no avail, but was able to analyze the photo and found no evidence of practical effects or CGI, and noticed compression similar to that of a digital camera. The images taken from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada in 2005 highlights a truly anomalous shape, almost disc-like, but with complex curves. According to the photographer of the image, Rob R.S., he was simply taking the images of the China Shipping Lanes vessel and saw no craft. Only when reviewing his photos on the SD card did he see the presence of the UFO. And now onto my actual profile picture, one of my favorite series of UFO images ever. These images were also taken in Wisconsin, this time in 2007 around Green Bay, and looks quite similar to the Weiwegu UFO with a different light configuration. Of course, there is a noticeable difference in the three triangular lights in the O3 images and the circular pattern of lights as depicted here, but the craft shape, color, and location is almost identical. I don't want to dive too much into this series of images now, as I do plan to explore them further. The three 1958 Trindade, Brazil photographs depict a classic flying disc with sharp edges, not dissimilar to the Calvine photographs. The photos were taken from the vessel Almirante Saldanha by photographer Almiro Barana near the Trindade Island, 600 miles off the Brazilian mainland. Barana, along with many of the other 48 passengers, including Lieutenant Homero, saw the UFO gleaming light fly behind Desado Peak. Seconds later, the craft reversed directions and flew closer and lower at noticeably faster speeds. The object was gray, metallic, and solid-looking, though surrounded by a greenish haze or mist. With a ring running through its midsection, this craft was described as resembling a flattened version of the planet Saturn. Knuth then goes on to reference the five characteristics of UAP, or six if you include biological effects, as famously outlined by Lou Elizondo of ATIP. These five characteristics I like to bring up quite often, and I'm thrilled Kevin mentions them. He pays special attention to the combination of sudden/instantaneous acceleration and hypersonic velocities without signatures. To analyze these two characteristics of UAP, Knuth references the famous Nimitz encounter. When people bring up UAP as foreign technology, I often like to reference this analysis. During the Tic Tac's altitude change from 28,000 feet to sea level in roughly 0.78 seconds, the craft experienced an estimated 5,400 Gs of force. To put this into perspective, a human can handle 16 Gs for less than a minute until death, and our best ballistic missiles can handle around 100 Gs before getting ripped to shreds.
A lower bound for the acceleration, which comes out to be around 5,000 Gs, 5,000 times the acceleration of gravity. No, people aren't going to survive this. Most equipment won't survive this. An F-35's wings will rip off at about 13 Gs.
To calculate the power of this acceleration, Knuth must have the mass of the Tic Tac. Of course, he does not have this data, so he takes an extremely conservative approach and estimates the mass of the Tic Tac to be around 1/10 the mass of a similarly sized F-18 at 10,000 kilograms. So for his calculations, he uses 1,000 kilograms as the mass of the Tic Tac. A simple power calculation reminiscent of my college physics days yields an output of 1,100 gigawatts, 10 times the total nuclear output of the United States. The professor then references a lecture made by the German father of modern rocketry, Hermann Oberth, on flying saucers that was completely new to me. For reference, Oberth mentored Operation Paperclip scientist and father of NASA, Wernher von Braun. In this lecture, Oberth quotes UFO speeds have been clocked in at 19 kilometers per second, which is equivalent to 42,000 miles per hour, or Mach 55. Interestingly, Oberth was able to calculate these values based off of 50 cases derived from USAF and US Navy data.
This has been known for a long time. Hermann Oberth was the German father of modern rocketry. He was a mentor of Wernher von Braun. In 1954, he gave a lecture on flying saucers where he pointed out that they have been measured to travel at speeds of 19 kilometers a second, which is about 42,000 miles an hour. And he points out that, he actually says, if there would only be three or four measurements, I would not rely upon them and would wait for few further measurements. But there is existing more than 50 such measurements, radar measurements, in 1954.
To add some interest here, in 1954, Oberth wrote in American Weekly, quote, "It is my thesis that flying saucers are real and that they are spaceships from another solar system. I think that they are possibly manned by intelligent observers who are members of a race that may have been investigating our Earth for centuries." He thinks that UFOs might fly by, quote, "distorting the gravitational field." Kevin then references the flight characteristics of a really under-the-radar UFO encounter that occurred at Minot Air Force Base in North Dakota in 1968. And what's worthy to note here, similar to Malmstrom, this airbase supported nuclear weapons, another connection to UFOs and nukes. According to base personnel, an egg-shaped UFO with skin described as molten lava maintained a distance of roughly 3 miles from the descending B-52. During a 3-second radar sweep, the UFO closed a distance of 2 miles. According to this acceleration, the craft accelerated at 209 Gs with a top speed of Mach 12, or 9,200 miles per hour. This case is absurdly interesting and something I may cover fully in the future, as the egg-shaped craft with the skin-like lava sounds awfully familiar to Weygandt's described crash of an egg-shaped craft with the skin exhibiting the mother of pearl effect, does it not? Also, I talk often about USAF Regulation 200-2, implemented in 1953 to restrict UFO reporting and to essentially keep any reports from being disclosed to Blue Book, Congress, and the American people. Well, the declassified sighting of the Minot report shows this case was reported under Regulation 200-2. Interesting to see how this case never made it into Blue Book files or real public awareness, but is a multi-sensor military detection of a UFO at a nuclear military base. And guys, I already covered the 1986 Japan Airlines incident pretty in-depth in my Iceberg Layer 2, so if you don't mind, I'll just overlay some of that footage here. It's one of my absolute favorite UFO cases, but please remember, Knuth calculates the speed of the craft reach around 269,000 miles per hour. At around 5 p.m. on November 17th, 1986, Captain Teriyachi and two crew claimed to see a UFO approach their plane traveling at 35,000 feet from the left. What they saw and described was one large rounder-sized UFO the size of an aircraft carrier. To put this into perspective, about 4 747s in diameter. Accompanying this enormous craft were two smaller lights, and the three followed this Boeing 747 for a period of 31 minutes. While traveling at cruising speed, Captain Kenju said the mothership maintained a distance of about 7.5 miles from his aircraft, but was essentially orbiting around his aircraft in a circular motion, sometimes at a constant fixed speeds, sometimes darting in and out around its orbit. It's worth mentioning that these UFOs were tracked on U.S. Federal Aviation Administration AN/FPS 117 long-range 3D phased arrays. The radar confirmed the UFO stayed about 7.5 miles in radius from the aircraft, maintaining that distance but occasionally changing sides during the radar's 12-second interval sweeps.
These exhibit extreme accelerations. They've been tracked at hypersonic speeds in air many times. They do not make, I'm running off the bottom of the screen, they don't make sonic booms or fireballs, which you would expect, so something very strange is going on. And one thing that's almost never mentioned is there's no energy deposition when they stop. This thing drops from 28,000 feet to sea level, getting up to about 42,000 miles an hour in the middle, and then stops. Where did all that energy go? Well, you know, first you worry about where it came from, but where did it go? Energy doesn't just disappear. When this thing comes to a stop, there ought to have been an explosion. And given the amount of power that it took, you can estimate how big that would have been. It should have been an explosion the same amount of energy as 250 Tomahawk cruise missiles simultaneously blowing.
The professor then references the consequences of these drastic accelerations to show that under such extreme rates of constant acceleration, these craft could reach high percentages of the speed of light to traverse intergalactic space at relativistic speeds. Crucially quoted by Knuth, quote, "Not only do these objects have flight characteristics necessary for interstellar travel, they would make excellent interstellar craft." And with available data, not only can the physics of UFOs be analyzed, but the luminosity too. Kevin attests to the luminosity of some UFOs attributing to their low visibility from photographs. Here he references three bright UFO sightings. The luminosity of these objects can be calculated like in the Canadian Air Force August 1953 sighting.
By Dr. Bruce Maccabee, and then summarized and reported by Jacques Vallée, Dr. Vallée. And they were able to look at the original photograph and measure the exposure level. And if you do this, you find that the luminosities are on the order of 2,000 to 30,000 megawatts.
Knuth suggests this massive luminosity output may in fact be a byproduct of the propulsion systems of these craft. And let's remember, in many UFO cases, electronics fail when in close proximity to a craft. This suggests the presence of electric and magnetic fields, such as the case in the 1976 Tehran incident where Major Jafari's avionics were scrambled as an orb detached itself from the UAP he was vectored towards and neared him. Many other cases see engines in cars fail, as such the 1983 McCampbell case. Electric fields needed to short out spark plugs on an engine would require a field output of 3 times 10 to the 6th volts per meter, possibly ionizing the air.
That'll short out the spark plugs in the car. It'll short out the distributor cam, so the car will stop running if it's a gasoline engine.
This electric field emitted by a small UFO would require several coulombs of charge, equating to about 10 to the 9th joules of energy. Knuth additionally touches on magnetic fields created by UFO.
These huge magnetic fields can cause an effect called the Faraday effect, which rotates the polarization of the light. So if you take a photograph of a UFO with a polarizing filter, which I recommend for this reason, you will see that you'll get rings around the UFO if it has a large magnetic field. This has been observed and it's been photographed.
Resulting in fields on the magnitude of around 10 to the 11th through 10 to the 13th amp meter squared, aka guys, massive magnetic fields. And finally, one of the least represented aspects of UFO, or should I say USO, unidentified submerged objects. Kevin dives into USOs operating near and within water.
So this is from Aguadilla. You can see the UFO dips into the water, doesn't make a splash, doesn't seem to affect the water very much. And in fact, the analysis done by SCU in the lower right shows that as the UFO hits the water at about 100 miles an hour, it continues traveling through the water at around the same speed. It only drops down to about 85 miles an hour. And it actually accelerates itself.
He references radar operator and seaman David Barnett. The professor discusses a USO case, brand new to me, from February of 1987 near the north of New Zealand. In this case, the HMNZS Southland was followed by a USO 150 feet wide and 800 feet long. In the span of less than half a minute, the USO closed a 20 kilometer distance, estimating a minimum speed and acceleration of 1,492 miles per hour and an average of 4.5 Gs. Noteworthy to add, the craft acted as if it did not interact with the water, similar to the video Kevin commented on. Closing the 20 kilometer distance, the USO passed under the HMNZS, killing all the ship's power and draining batteries. Kevin then lists a total of 8 old cases in which transmedial air and water UFOs were observed. Not going to cover this now, but let me know if you would like a full video on these cases. Hey guys, it's UAP GURP. Thank you so much for joining me today. probably notice a little bit of a different environment. I'm in the process of upgrading the setup, so bear with me while we get a new webcam, kind of new workspace to show off, and kind of upgrade things a little bit. Thanks for joining me as we discussed Kevin Knuth and his Sol Foundation talk in his paper, Estimating Flight Characteristics of Anomalous Unidentified Aerial Vehicles. Truth be told, since this paper dropped in 2019, I have been infatuated with the data here, even reaching out to Kevin on LinkedIn asking if I could work for him. Of course, didn't pan out, but maybe someday in the future. But just being able to visualize the G-forces experienced by things like the Nimitz, Tic Tac, and so forth is truly mind-boggling, and actually is, we start to put some calculations and data to these craft instead of just the anomalous craft and their kind of characteristics as proposed by Lou Elizondo. But a fascinating venture and presentation done by Knuth. What was your favorite case he discussed? Probably the Nimitz 5400 Gs or the Japan Airlines. But I'm just really impressed that Kevin Knuth and some physicists actually take the time to do academic research on UAP. At some point in the future, I want to do a video on the transmedial craft as he discussed the eight cases that are pre-basically World War II. That should be a really fascinating video. And whenever people like to say that UAP are just foreign adversaries technology, look what Kevin's proposed. These cases have been occurring since the 20th century and almost before. How is this technology possible then if it's a foreign adversary? Absolutely not. But anyway, guys, please remember to like and subscribe. I'll catch you guys on the next video. Thank you so much for joining. Bye.